Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello, it's lovely to be back with you. I'm sitting in a whole new world from my perspective because I'm sitting with a Maggie who is drinking a cup of tea with caffeine in it, which is not something I've ever experienced before, so watch out, it might be a bumpy ride. She's drinking tea with caffeine in it because last night she was unfaithful to me.
I was, and this morning I had to have a coffee before I even got here. I don't drink coffee.
Oh my God.
I was cruelly and heartlessly unfaithful to you at 2 a.m. in the morning with a lady called Susan Weed. Have you ever heard of Susan Weed?
Oh, I have. You lucky thing, talking to Susan Weed.
S-U-S-U-N, Susan Weed. Yes, I found her on Facebook a long time ago because she does foraging and herbal stuff. Mm. And she invited me on her Blog Talk Radio program, ostensibly to talk about the new book, Kabbalah and Healing. But we went round in some incredible circles. And it was utterly fascinating how different it is to do an interview at 2 a.m. In the pitch black. And I was hoping to see Venus rise because every morning if I go to the loo at about 3 o'clock at the moment, Venus is so beautiful and bright in the sky. But of course, the weather last night was fairly cloudy, let's put it like that. Torrential rain and high winds. But it was extraordinary because I was talking to somebody with absolutely no mystical knowledge of religion, which is utterly fine. I don't mind that at all. But she went straight into it and said, I don't believe in any patriarchal, brutal God in the sky. Mm-hmm. And it developed from there. And we talked about it quite a lot. And I was far more vulnerable, open and rabid in my talking about the damage that's been done to Christianity and my passion for finding the heart of it. Because I was just sort of saying, but it wasn't like that. It was Romanized, and it's the problem with all religion is it's usually regarded from the first half of life, which is the ego consciousness, which is the rules and the regulations. And that's exactly what the great teacher Jesus came to point out. Hmm. He came to talk about the damage to his own religion and how you could lift it up. And there's stuff that people miss, and I am so passionate about this. And Susan, bless her, was very gracious about it. Went, oh, God, that's interesting. Oh, thank you. Do go on, instead of, what the hell are you on about, woman? Because the feminine was always in there. It's been, yes, it's been edited out, but I actually think there is value in having to seek for stuff.
Yes.
That's probably just my wiring, but
yeah, let's be really clear that that doesn't mean we're saying woohoo the patriarchy.
No, yeah. No, but my passion is going into this and saying, okay, what is the truth? What was the original? What is the intention here? And if you look at the stories of Jesus, he never once criticizes what people would call a sinner. Mm. He has no time for the people who think they are virtuous.
Yeah.
He has no time for the priests. He would be deeply scathing about most religions of the world if he were here today, because he was there for the people who needed to be healed or helped or just listened to the knowledge.
Well, also, from the sounds of everything I've ever heard from you, he was, in a way, he was there to go, let's dismantle the patriarchy. But then in his own time, and that he was very much saying, you guys have made it about rules and it's not, it's about love and compassion and respect.
Yeah, and it's all hidden in plain sight in the Gospels, which generally don't get read by a lot of people. You have the bit that you may get read to you at church, but the bits in between are extraordinary. And if you think about it, even with the Gospels being written down, the feminine was still honoured but hidden.
Right.
Honoured but hidden, because it's so sacred and so beautiful that it's do not cast pearls before swine. And that sounds a really harsh thing to say, but you've got to find this beauty.
But that does speak to a world in which the masculine is so overt.
Oh, tell me about it, yeah.
Yeah, which can't be a good thing. I mean, I agree. I think there's, you know, that you mustn't pass pearls before swine is
It's a harsh saying.
It's a harsh saying, but I think it's fair. I feel that it's fair because apart from anything else, not everybody wants to know the truth of spiritual teachings. Not everyone wants to consider the sacred or what we might refer to as spiritual at all.
Yes.
And so there's no point in making it very overt. But also, I believe that what we kind of flash about as a Facebook meme or whatever is, because it's overt, I think a lot of people, or I'm making a horribly judgmental statement here, but what I see is that when it's overt, people think they understand,
yes,
and they don't necessarily.
Exactly. You've actually nailed it there. And this is the bit where it sounds so difficult and arrogant, as in, if you're not willing to look, you're not ready for it.
Yeah.
And that's fine, because if you're happy, great, end of. Mm. As far as I'm concerned, if you're happy living your life, you don't need anything that I would try and teach you.
No, but equally, let's not make that about hiding the feminine aspect of what is overt, which at the moment it is.
Yes, yes, I understand that. But if you actually just read the Gospels, there's this story of this man who's strung upon a cross. All the men run away, apart from John. All the men. But the women stay. The women understand the principle of order, disorder, reorder, which is death, crucifixion, death and resurrection. You have to be disordered. You have to be, if you're going to grow in spirituality, you have to experience what I call necessary suffering. Mm. And I resisted that for so, so long. But if you don't understand grief and you don't understand loss and you haven't sat with death in some form, whether it's the death of a relationship or your child leaving home, all sorts of deaths, or the death of a pet, then if you can't grieve, you can't have genuine compassion for the other, I don't think.
I totally agree. And I think that the work of grief and grieving is something that we are being faced with in our culture, in our society, on our world at the moment, really, really big time. And that grief and grieving and death are, I'm pretty sure we've been here before, but, you know, they are taboo in the consumer culture. They're totally taboo. We are encouraged to want to live forever with our plastic, whatever. And that if we cannot properly grieve, then we will not find the place in our heart where those tears flow out and there's room for peacefulness and compassion and maybe even empathy.
Mm.
But if I'm fine, everything's fine, buttoned up, terribly English, actually.
And even worse than that, if we haven't really experienced the disorder that is important before the reorder, then our empathy becomes projection sometimes. Mm. You know, what would I feel like that? Let me be lovely and compassionate rather than being able to sit with it and just say, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here. We've got a dear friend who's got heart problems at the moment, who's back in hospital. I think I've spoken about him before, Adam. Yeah. And it's so important to be utterly honest and sorrowing with him for the situation, because we went to take care of him the last time he came out of hospital, and he said, can you come again? And I said, I don't know, my dog's not well. I don't know. Instead of being able to say no or yes, the only truth I could give him was, I don't know. And he said, absolutely, that's fair enough. And he's going to ask somebody else. So we will actually go and pick him up and bring him back to Devon to recuperate when he's out.
Perfect.
But just they were able to be quiet with him. He was calling me on his mobile phone saying he's been transferred to another hospital and he's frightened because he has to see a cardiologist and he has got lung problems and he's probably got pneumonia.
Oh, good chat.
Yes, and two things we could do. One was we could have silence on the mobile phone call, because we at some point it was just, I'm here.
Yeah.
You don't need to speak, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm sitting with you.
So. And there was no don't cry. It was, yes, cry, and I will cry with you because you're my brother and I love you.
Yeah.
And it was also really wonderful to be able to say, because he's been working with his relationship with his mother, which has been toxic for a long, long time. And we are doing, did you ever see a movie called Throw Mama from the Train?
No, I've heard of it.
It was a movie where two men had problems with their mother and they agreed to kill each other's mothers. Because nobody would be able to work out. They just met on a train.
Yeah.
And they were total strangers, got talking and agreed to kill each other's mothers because nobody would trace it back to them. There was no possibility. So Adam and I are doing the converse of that, which is sending healing to the relationship. I'm sending healing to his relationship with his mother and he's sending healing to my relationship with my mother. I trained him as a healer many, many years ago and he's a very good one. So we've been doing this and suddenly he has a huge relapse and is rushed off to hospital. And the wonderful thing is we can say, this is the healing crisis. Mm. It's come up now. Mm. You will need allopathic medicine, but after that you're coming down to Devon with us and you're going to Susie and you're going to lie on the floor in her beautiful snug where we are now and she's going to find parts of your soul. And he just said, oh, thank you, yes.
Mm.
You know, and this is a fairly Orthodox Jewish guy.
Okay.
So open to this healing, and I just love him.
Yeah. Rah. Hi, Adam, if you're listening.
He will be listening at some point, yes.
I wish you well.
Yes. But back to this thing about the difference of our relationship in the night and in the day, because I did talk with Susan Weed. I wanted to talk with Susan because I admire her immensely.
Mm,
apart
too.
From the fact that she slaps people right, left and centre if they spell her name incorrectly.
As do you, I
as
believe.
As do I, yes. And she's far more firm about it than I am.
Ah.
But it was utterly glorious. I think I am more of a creature of the night than I know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've got Scorpio in my chart.
Yeah.
And I will sing at night far more than I'll sing in the morning. It's interesting, so.
Yeah, it's funny.
And of course, the veil is thinner.
The veil is most definitely thinner. And I think as well, because we're more used to being alone at night, perhaps, and there's the sense of the world being smaller at night, that I think we allow ourselves to be more vulnerable. And also, frankly, when you're that tired, you know, you and I are both absolutely ragged with tiredness today.
Yes.
You, because you've been up being unfaithful with another Susan. But I mean, hey, wouldn't we all, if any of us could speak to Susan Weed, I'm damn sure we would. But that me, because I am, yes, the Scorpio creature you just mentioned, I've been totally burning the candle at both ends, hanging out with my sons till God knows what o'clock, and then still getting up for my day. And I am one tired woman, but I also really firmly believe and see through the pattern of my own days over my, however many years there are of it, about 56, but I keep getting it wrong. I'm reasonably confident I am 56, but I told somebody very emphatically I was 55 and it turned out not to be true. Anyway, just derailed myself with a silly aside. Oh yes, that... when it seems to me that there are times in our lives when we get kind of called to make ourselves knackered in a way so that we can be that open and that vulnerable and vulnerable in a good way.
Mm.
And actually, that means we just arrived at a moment where I realized a few podcasts back that I was talking about protection. I can't remember if it was in response to a question somebody had asked, but anyway, and was saying about how to me the most potent way to really commune with the spirits properly is to make yourself utterly vulnerable, and therefore you don't need protection because you become completely at one with the spirits. And I just wanted to add an addendum to that, which I think is important for why, certainly for why I'm tired right now, is that you don't just make yourself vulnerable and open to come what may.
No.
You make yourself open and vulnerable and you accept and receive very, very, very precise and exact spirit guidance, assistance, support, strength, etc., because you have a really clear intention. And so it's not just whoever happens to be passing and I'll be fine. It's, you know, that kind of Pollyanna version of, oh, I just trust the spirits. ends up with some, in your favourite expression, some real wanky bollocks, frankly. Mm. You just end up being yes. an idiot, potentially, because there's all sorts out there in the world. And so you have to be really clear that what you're 100% trusting is what's yours, your allies, your spirits, your guardian angel, your tutelary spirit, your ally for psychopomp or for healing work or whatever it is, your power animal, your body protector. But when you do trust them and make yourself open and vulnerable to them all of the time, you don't need to repeatedly call them and shore yourself up and, you know, build the barricades or whatever, because they're always there, because that's how you live.
Yes.
But I just want to repeat one more time. It's because you're doing it with clarity, clarity of intention, total and utter integrity of knowing.
Absolutely. And if somebody says to me they need protection, I will believe them because yeah. they haven't got themselves aligned in that way. And I spent many years when I wasn't aligned in that way. So protection, prayers of protection or rituals of protection are really important until you don't need them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lovely prayer of protection, which I do because I do a prayer line on Thursdays for Unity Church in the United Kingdom. Not every Thursday, but because we're not supposed to tell people who we are. We have to be anonymous. They always want us to know who we are. So they think, can I speak to so-and-so? But no, this is a prayer. This is a channel for prayer. But there's a lovely prayer of protection and people will all often ask for it. Mm. And I will sometimes say it myself. If I'm out of balance, I will say it because it will pull me back into the balance rather than bring an outside protection. Though I will say if I've ever been in physical danger or something, as is in the new book, the one that's coming out late September called Tales of the Blue Panda, which features you and me. It's the fictionalized story of us.
I can't wait to read it.
With all sorts of addendums and funny stuff in and driving through the universe in a blue Fiat Panda to retrieve souls and that kind of thing. And I've now lost my train of thought. What was I talking?
Protection. Well, having fallen off the train, do you want to tell it? I know that there's going to be loads of people going, what was the prayer, Maggie?
Oh, yes, so, that's right. The prayer of protection, yes. It's the light of God surrounds me. The love of God enfolds me. The power of God protects me. The presence of God watches over me. Wherever I am, God is. And all is well.
Beautiful. Thank you.
It is, but wherever I am, God is, you know, so therefore... Oh, that's right, I know what it was. In the book, she has to have a protective angel because she's fighting a demonic paedophile ring. Well, she's not fighting them, she's trying to love her way through it, but there's a fair amount of stuff going on. And she actually has a protective angel from the Archangel Camael called... And I just love this way of including angels in a book, because angels don't chat. And the angel says to her, I am your protection. And I can make you invisible for a short time. You need to give me a code word. And she goes, good grief, you make me invisible. And he goes, good grief. And immediately that's the code word. So she's got the rest of the book not saying good grief. And some seriously embarrassing things where she's, oh, good grief. And fondly, she's and everybody doesn't know where she is. But of course, making yourself invisible is not actually necessarily a magical thing, as in you have to vanish. You just make yourself not visible.
Totally. Yeah.
Can you do that?
Totally. Yeah. And have spent much of my adult life fairly deliberately being invisible.
Yes.
And then kind of at the insistence of the spirits have made myself more and more and more visible. But yes, how to completely disappear in a crowded room is it's actually really quite easy.
Can you tell people?
Yeah, it's all as usual. It's about where do you put your intention and what do you emanate? So just as easily as you can make yourself invisible, you can make yourself very visible. And just as easily as you can make yourself vulnerable and feel very vulnerable, so you can make yourself invulnerable. And it's all about who do you call to, if you like? What do you call to? What is your intention and what do you emanate? And so we are porous beings, part of a living, breathing universe, inspirited world, which is all made up of the same stuff. We know this. And so if you want to be super visible, then you call to all of your power to your kind of meerkat stance to and you pull through the sort of enormity of the great I am in quite an egoic way,
mm-hmm.
In a way that's not really quite accurate, but the kind of the presence of me, the fullness of me,
yes.
and all that I could bring through,
yes.
you call to. And likewise, if you want to make yourself invisible, you simply send it away and call instead to, you know, may I be the same colour as the wall, or
yes.
may I just be this corner type of thing.
Yes, I just say blend.
Yeah.
Blend.
Yeah. And when I had a really bizarre experience, actually, I was in a town which shall not be named, but if you've ever been there, then you may know exactly where I mean, where there are a great number, in my experience, of deeply odd, spiritually a little contorted people mm. gathered in one place, alongside some very beautiful souls mm. also. And when somebody who's got connection clearly shows up in town, there's a real sense of, it's like swimming amongst sharks. There's mm. this sense of, I want a slice of that mm. from some of the
yes.
less savoury ones. And it's so overt that I have to walk around that town simply projecting middle class housewife, brainless, you know, mm. airless, what do you call it? Airhead, nothing to see, nothing to see.
Nothing to see here.
Yeah, and I literally go around with mm. nothing to see here, just la 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 la.
Mm.
That's all around me all of the time.
I haven't thought of doing that, and I quite often come out of towns like that.
Mm.
Pretty much covered with dead souls.
Yeah.
On the way out.
Mm.
You know,
I'm
you
not
know,
so worried about the dead souls because they obviously get attracted to us because they need psychic
yes.
bumping.
Yeah.
But when it's energy yeah. thieves looking for a little tasty tidbit of something nice.
Yes.
Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm sorry, but they are out there.
Yes.
And
yes. You can usually tell them by the fact that they tell you your business before you've asked them. Oh, I can see your aura. Aren't you beautiful? You know, that kind of thing. Oh,
yeah.
No.
On your bright mate.
On your bright mate. Somebody gave me a definition of vulnerability once, which I've held on to forever, and I love it. They said, true vulnerability is when everything except what you truly need flows straight through you. It's mm. not about having a block in you that catches everything. It's about just being invisible, if you like, being allowing it to just pass.
Yeah, yeah. And just being in flow also. That
yes.
is exquisite. I really like that.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
I love that too.
And the idea, the notion that really speaks to me, actually, because the notion that when we are vulnerable, if we're allowing ourselves to be vulnerable in a good way rather than being vulnerable and really feeling mm. unsafe, which is something different,
yeah.
then we are hugely in trust, and we're trusting that what we need will be here when we need it.
Mm.
Whereas the one who is not in trust and therefore who tries to be invulnerable is the one who, for example, goes out, no judgment, but goes out and buys gazillions of toilet rolls when they think mm. that times are going to be hard.
Yes.
Because they don't trust that there will be enough mm. and that they will have enough. And that you know, extends itself to enough of anything and everything, from
yes.
toilet rolls through to, you know, your capacity to be held when you grieve, or your,
yes,
you know, whatever.
Our world believes in the finite.
Totally. Yeah, and we're not very trusting as a culture.
No, absolutely. We believe that death is the end.
Mm-hmm.
We don't necessarily believe there's any spirit or anything. Some people don't even know what their soul is. Mm. And I suppose I did when I was younger. It was other people kept telling me, you have healing hands, or that kind of thing. And I just didn't know what to do with it for years.
Mm.
Absolutely for years. And that sort of takes me onto the subject of death. And there is one thing that does concern me at the moment, is that because we are far more secular, and that's fine because there's an awful lot of religion that's really bad, so much of the funeral business, or the death industry, as Stephen Jenkinson calls it,
mm.
is now very secular. And it's all focused on the funeral or for the family. And I get that. When I do a funeral, it's absolutely right for the family. It has to be the exact level of faith that is appropriate.
Yeah.
However, there is also a dead person.
Yeah.
And the idea of a funeral originally was not for the living, because the wake is for the living.
Yeah.
The funeral was to make sure that the dead person was not earthbound.
Mm-hmm.
And 99 times out of 100, there's no need for that.
Yeah.
But the 100th time, yes. And it does worry me a little bit, because I've been to lots of funerals, friends and family, where the funeral director took the service.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, there are lots of people being trained as celebrants, which is a lovely thing to want to do, because a lot of people would run a mile from wanting to work at a funeral. But I am aware that there are an awful lot of them who haven't got the ability to work with a soul if the soul isn't there, because when you go to see the family, it becomes quite clear very swiftly if the soul has left or if the soul is there, and if the soul wants to leave or if the soul, whatever is going on. And I really sort of ache to teach everyone to be aware in this way, because apart from anything else, it would mean fewer souls latching on to folk like me when I'm walking around.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful woman called Deb Rowley who you can find on Facebook. She lives in New Zealand and she's become a dear friend. She approached me when I was ill and was incredibly helpful and generous with her healing. And she is absolutely brilliant at just clearing off this aspect. So if you ever have a feeling that there might be something with you that isn't part of you that you're not happy with, contact Deb Rowley on Facebook, because she is a miracle worker. She really is. Or if necessary, me, I guess. But I've got enough to
do. Yeah, or me, but I don't. I have. It's not, psychopomp work's not hugely my calling. But no. On within my website, there is a page called Shamanic Healing, and the sub page of that page called People Who I Recommend, and there are people on that page whose work is most definitely psychopomp work. Yeah. And it's important work for our times, you know, because we've lost our story as a culture. We're not even, as far as I understand it, we're not even that Christian anymore.
No, we're not.
And so altogether too many people haven't considered where will I go when I die at all, as you've previously said. They just think it's going to be an end, and then they discover that actually it isn't an end, and their body might have stopped, but another part of them has lived on. And my experience is that there are many reasons why you would just hang around, and the most common one seems to be, I don't know where to go. I do vaguely remember being told about heaven and hell. I haven't necessarily been super good. We're not talking about super bad people
at all.
But, you know, I didn't go to church. And I do remember something around being told that if I didn't go to church, I was pretty much damned to hell. So, shit, maybe that means I'm damned to hell. Think I'll just stay here. Pretty understandably. And they need to go to the place of ancestors, which in my experience is neither heaven nor hell. It's the next place.
It's the next plane. And there are many, many planes. It's not just heaven.
No.
There are many planes, learning planes, different planes. We grow or not grow just as much on the other side as we do here. I would like to say here that generally atheists don't have a problem.
We're dying.
No. Because they aren't expecting anything, so they go, oh, what's this? And they're interested, as far as I can see. So they will see the light. And I think the movie Ghost was amazing in its the way it just explained so simply. The man is murdered. The light comes for him. But he turns away for it because he wants to protect his wife.
Mm.
And that explains it all. You know, the light comes for everyone.
Yeah.
The light came for Hitler. The light would have taken him to the hospital processes until the time he was willing to face what he'd done.
Mm.
I mean, that's what I believe. Obviously, I don't know. I can't remember. But I wasn't Hitler. At least I don't think I was. Oh, Lord.
Terrifying prospect. I don't think you were, Mary.
No, I don't think so. But you can easily miss it if you don't know what to see. It's like the native peoples in the Caribbean area when Columbus's ships came over the horizon. They couldn't see them because they didn't know what they were.
Yeah.
So if you don't know that there's something afterwards, you may not even know that you died.
Yes, which is the other, that's another massive amount of souls who need soul retrieval, who need psychopomp, beg your pardon, are those who haven't realised that they're dead.
Yes.
And it seems to be quite commonly people who die in road traffic accidents, is my experience, that they're not quite clear that they're dead.
Yes.
And once they know they're dead, they're perfectly willing to go to the next place. Mm. And then, I could go on and on and on. So many stories of, you know, why you wouldn't. People stay here to protect their loved ones as a ghost. People stay here because they have suffered from massive soul loss and literally can't move on until they've collected those parts.
Yes.
And if those parts are being held by someone who is alive, they can't go on until that person also dies.
Oh, interesting. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, which then means, of course, that person who's got the soul part ends up with the kind of rest of them hanging around them, which is then very unhealthy situation for them.
Yes.
And then one, actually a dear, dear chap who I knew, who was like, I am not going anywhere until basically the angels promise me that I don't ever have to come back here.
Oh, yeah.
Which they did. And so on he went.
Yes, I often have people say to me, this is my last lifetime here. And I think, okay. Well, if that's what you want, I'm not saying anything, but I would doubt it.
Well, they definitely promised him he never had to come back.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you can continue on other planes, so fair enough. You know,
maybe even on other planets.
Almost certainly on other planets. Mm. So I was listening to Richard Rohr in the dark of the night because I couldn't get to sleep because my adrenaline was up having done the interview. And I love listening to Father Richard Rohr. His website is cac.org, the Center for Action and Contemplation, but he's all over YouTube. And he was saying the biggest problem with Christianity is that our God is too small. It's a small tribal God. It's been made into a small tribal God. And he said when
out as a small tribal God, excuse me, the desert fathers.
Okay, fair enough. But the idea of the teaching was to take it out to the Gentiles, to the whole of the world, you know, take the knowledge that you had a direct relationship with the divine. But anyway, I digress. But he said when he was growing up, he was told that there's one star for every human on the planet. Now they know there are at least 6 galaxies for everyone who has ever been alive on this planet in our universe.
Say that again, I'm not good
at
maths.
There are 6 galaxies, whole galaxies with millions of stars in each one for every single human soul that's been born on Earth.
So is that a serious suggestion that we go off and become a star when we're dead?
No, it's a serious suggestion that the universe is so utterly, utterly vast that to assume we're the only life-producing planet in is utterly ridiculous.
Ah,
and if there is a divinity at all, it's the divinity of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Absolutely all of it. So it really isn't bothered about whether you lied to your mother when you were 12.
Sorry, Mum. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and I do ache a little, but that's my projection for folks who are tied down in a small tribal religion. And you see so much of this now. There's a meme going around on Facebook, and I foolishly engaged with one of the people commenting on it yesterday, which is a picture of Kermit the Frog saying, oh, I see, so God will protect you if you don't wear a mask, but you need an AK-45 for everything else. And somebody who was a gun opener, and obviously a right-wing American, was chuntering away on there. And I foolishly said, you haven't actually answered the question. Why would you believe that God would protect you in one way but not another? And she really, really went for me. Absolutely went for me. And I was balanced enough to just go back and say, I'm sorry you feel so upset, and I'm sorry if what I said hurt you. I simply was asking you if you would mind answering the question. And I didn't go back after that. I unfollowed the thread. But it was the need to be right.
Mm.
And we all want to be right.
Mm-hmm.
But another of the wonderful phrases I got from one of the Unity teachers was, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm I learned so much from that simple saying. And so often when I'll say, I don't think this is going to work out, but I'd like to be wrong.
That intrigues me now, just because before we started recording this, you were observing to me that I say sorry a lot. Mm. And I do. I say sorry a ridiculous amount. But I remember once somebody, in one of my many, many life's kind of doings in this life, was that I worked in a cafe. And I remember this chap coming in. Oh my God, he was the ultimate in high maintenance cafe dude. So he came in, and in a teeny weeny little organic coffee shop, he wanted a pot of tea, but he wanted the water freshly boiled, from cold, in a warmed teapot, on loose leaf tea, la da 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 da, and cool, you know.
Yeah, fine. Channeling my mother.
Yeah, exactly. If that's what you want, fine, you know, yeah. I can do that for you. It's a cafe. I'm here to, in many ways, to...
To serve you, to
bring you whatever kind of tea and coffee it is that you want, and cake, within the limits of this tiny little place. Mm. And I did all that, and I took it out to him, and then something was wrong. I don't remember what was wrong, but maybe it had to do with the milk or the... I don't remember what.
You didn't put the milk in the cup for him.
I didn't. I put the milk in a jug. Anyway, I cannot remember what was wrong, but there was some tiny detail that was wrong. And he said, you know, well, la 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 la, and he was really quite rude. Mm. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And off I trotted to go and make it right for him.
Yes.
And the woman I was working with was like, oh my God, Susie, you're just not afraid of anything, are you? And I went and did the thing, and I was like, what the fuck does that mean? What does that mean?
Yeah.
And we had a conversation about it afterwards. And what it meant was that for her, that whole thing would have made her wrong somehow.
Ah, yes.
And then she wouldn't have been able to say sorry because she would have been wrong. She would have felt defensive, and she might very well have been rude to him.
Oh, now that's fascinating.
And, isn't it? Thought, wow, okay, so I guess I've had so much practice over the year.
Yeah.
I don't really mind being wrong. I'm used to it.
Yeah.
But
no, sorry is incredibly valuable unless it's just done as a self-immolation aspect, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, quite often you say, oh, I'm sorry, I've lost the thread. And I don't care that you've lost the thread. It's a conversation.
Yeah, true. But I am genuinely sorry. I don't mean to be an airhead. I can't help it.
No. Well, we both have the same thing, which is we go off on a tangent.
Yeah.
And actually, that's part of my wiring. I have a Taurian Mercury, and my head gets overloaded, so I will drop a tangent into a conversation to give me time to catch up, to be able to hear what the other person is saying. But of course, if I'm speaking, I've still got the habit of doing the tangent, and then I can't get back. Which is why we're both sitting here now with notebooks. So when we go off on a tangent, we're writing down vulnerability or darkness. Or something. We're on 38 minutes. I think we better be quiet.
Okay.
Thank you for listening. And hopefully we'll see you again next week. If you like this podcast, would you be an absolute hero and share it on social media for us?
Or heroine.
Well,
just be a love. Let's not get into that.
That's fair enough. But one of the guardian angels in the book is called Hero, and Hero is a woman's name as well, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, okay. My favourite hero is a dog, locally.
Lovely.
Very, very big and beautiful. Anyway, okay, thanks for listening.
But, yeah, always you've got to clarify these things. Hero as in no gender.
Okay. Cool.
Thank you. Goodbye.